And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. It is a busy and exciting day on this program today. We just finished with Grace Batchoun from Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East. Looks like the event is going ahead. There was Rationality and Sanity, and a pleasing event is going to happen on April 2nd. So I'm going to try to be there. I encourage people to check out the CJPME website. But we're joined now by Phil Taylor from the Taylor Report. Let's see if we've got him on the line. Phil, can you hear me?
Yes. How do you do? How are you doing?
I'm good today. How are you?
Not bad.
Not bad. Well, that's better than bad. I can tell you that our phone connection is a bit fuzzy, just like it was last week, but don't worry about it. It's all good. I mean, we've got you loud and clear. And for those that are just tuning in, of course, we're speaking with Phil Taylor from the Taylor Report. We've featured his segments probably once a week on this program in the last few weeks. The Taylor Report, the program that Phil hosts and co-hosts, has been covering the issue of intervention in Libya since late February. They've been talking about the dangers of intervention, looking at what leaders across the world have been saying on the issue, especially in Latin America, Chavez and Castro and the presidents of Bolivia and Ecuador. They had been warning about this for a month now and looking for peaceful solutions, looking for negotiated solutions. And we on this program looked at the dangers of this intervention and the fact that it's an escalation, that that no-fly zone would give carte blanche to NATO to expand the war. And that's basically what's happened. Things have gotten out of control very quickly. So the no-fly zone turned into a bomb-the-ground zone within about 24 hours after it was instituted. And they're openly taking sides in a civil war now, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's, you know, and I don't think very many people are surprised, actually, because we're used to, and maybe we shouldn't grow too used to it, but we just understand that leaders will lie to us. I was thinking, going all the way back to Korean War, it was called a police action. Everybody scratched their heads over that. Many thousands of soldiers were killed there.
And if you die in a police action, you're just as dead as if you were in a war.
Yes, except you feel, I think, on the scoreboard, a little ridiculous. But that's what it was called. And then, of course, in Vietnam, they said they were just going to provide a little backup training for the government's forces, and they ended up pouring thousands and thousands of troops in, killing the Vietnamese, and of course losing many thousands of Americans while they were at it. So, once again, that's what's going on.
You see Vietnamese, and that strikes me. I think 1964, Vietnam was supposed to be a limited intervention. It was a small.
Yeah, it was going to be manageable, small country, superpower, and it was going to be something they could take care of. It's part of the, I guess the word that we need to repeat a lot is hubris, arrogance, madness. And by the way, this is our issue. I mean, we need to be asking, we spoke about this previous, but what is our government doing involving itself in a civil war, pretending that it's interested in civilians while aiding and abetting one of the sides in the war? And why are we tolerating it? Why isn't there a great outcry that no one, for example, the first thing you should ask of your government is, what have you done to maintain the peace? What have you done to try to actually intervene in a way that might be conducive to a peaceful resolution, which could also include plans for how people's needs and wishes could be realized? And you know, Mr. Chavez of Venezuela put forward a proposal, and of course, he's just pushed aside. It was part of this arrogance. He's the leader of a major power. He has good relations with the states in the region. He's exactly the kind of person who could, through his good offices, help bring about a resolution. And the same goes also for the African Union. And the reporting here is so bad, and the Canadian people are not being told that 53 states, African states, have asked that this not go forward. They did not agree to the no-fly zone.
Well, Phil,
and they propose a negotiated settlement.
The African Union is completely ignored. They're treated as if they don't exist.
Or they're misrepresented. The Toronto Star, actually, one of its favorite writers, actually tried to shoehorn them into a claim that the Arab League and the African Union had endorsed a no-fly. But, of course, it was a lie in regard to the African Union, and poor Canadian readers of our area did not know that. But then further, you know, this myth about the Arab League, it further shows the cynicism and, again, the arrogance of the people driving this war, that they say, well, you know, it's very important to us that the Arab League asked us to establish a no-fly zone. Well, they didn't actually ask. They came under a lot of pressure from Hillary Clinton, primarily, as U.S. representative. And eventually, in their meeting, it's a institution with 22 members. 11 members participated in a meeting behind closed doors. And then they announced that they were in favor of a no-fly zone. By the way, with highly restrictive language, nothing to involve no-drive zone or no-fly plus. We're getting all this weird language and morphing and all that. But the Arab League, its views are totally misrepresented.
They seem to have corralled maybe 9 or 11 Arab League countries together for this initial vote where many of them weren't present. And then they referred to that decision saying, oh, the Arab League endorses us.
Yes.
And then later on, the Arab League countries came out and said, we don't endorse no-fly zone, we don't endorse airstrikes. They made no reference to the statements by the Arab League. So it was selectively used.
Well, it was just a momentary thing, that banner is still flying on the attacking force. NATO is pretending the Arab League is with them. There's one country of the Arab League that is involved, actually, is providing planes, war planes, and that's Qatar.
That is the home of Al Jazeera.
Home of Al Jazeera and a participant in the suppression of the people of Bahrain. So they attack peaceful demonstrators in Bahrain, and they support an armed insurrection against the government in Libya. So they're a pretty cynical lot. But the other key thing about it, I mean, we should all note, and again, every Canadian ought to say, why are we doing this? We're continually hearing about freedom blowing through the Middle East and the Arab awakening. But so far, the states that have benefited have been the absolute monarchies. They are sitting there, stable as can be, Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and Qatar and the Gulf states. Now, these are super wealthy royal families is all they are. And nothing's happening to them. And certainly no one in the West, none of our Obama nor Sarkozy nor Mr. Cameron are doing anything to trouble them.
Well, that's
a matter of fact, they're trying to help them out.
Yeah, that's what Obama and the chiefs of staff meant when they said they had to approach these uprisings selectively or one by one. All of their pet monarchies there, they're going to be allowed to continue, and demonstrations are going to continue to be repressed in Bahrain and elsewhere.
Yes, absolutely.
The fact is, you see Saudi Arabia and some Arab press saying, we can't let Iran interfere in Bahrain, which is my favorite, because it's my understanding there's a foreign power that has a very large military base in Bahrain that is working with the government to suppress people. And somebody invited Saudi Arabia to send tanks across the border to help repress those demonstrations. So there's interference in Bahrain, but we know where it's coming from. the other thing on this subject, you know, in terms of how we got to where we are and how we got to the war, the fact that other options were sidelined, it seems that we're, once again, victims of the do-something crowd. We've got to do something.
You know, the humanitarian interventionists.
Yeah, because the other options in terms of diplomacy, negotiation, things had been discussed for weeks in terms of putting together committees, investigations, people willing to talk. Again, that was being ignored, and we waited until we got to a point where there were rebels that were on the verge of being defeated. And at that point, that is when the international community, the U.S., France, and Britain, step in and say, we have to do something or the rebels are going to be defeated. And so they tried to put this choice to the rest of the world, saying, if we don't step in, those guys are going to get wiped out, and then Gaddafi remains in control of that country. I guess, you know, they want to put you in this, you're with us or you're against, or with the terrorists kind of Bush-style position.
Yeah, well, and by the way, I don't even, of course, as you know, they've had to go into terrible contortions to make any sense of this, because Gaddafi is the one who had given up his weapons programs. He had been a leading member of the fight against terror and had fought with the al-Qaeda people. He was the first one to call for an Interpol arrest for Osama bin Laden. So, and then in his country, in eastern Libya, particularly in the city of Benghazi, you have a very high number of volunteers who fought in Afghanistan alongside America against the Russians, and then alongside the Taliban against the Americans, and then in Iraq they volunteered. Now, that's their, they come from Benghazi, and he says these are bad guys, and I'm fighting them. So how does Sarkozy and anybody else turn Gaddafi into the terrorists? It doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, Sarkozy,
but by the way, this, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, Sarkozy himself is getting pretty belligerent and aggressive. He basically he put out an ultimatum to the Arab world. He said, anyone else who represses people inside their countries are in line for a NATO intervention. You're next, he says.
Yeah. Which he's playing to a profound anti-Arab chauvinism that exists in France. France is a proud former a powerful empire. It remains a kind of empire, and baiting Arabs is a lot of fun, and you can get, you could possibly pick up some votes. We know that he is very brutal towards Arabs in France. He's demonstrated that several times over. He always speaks in racist terms about Arabs within France. He deported the Roma people, denied them of their rights under French law, and threw them out of the country, resembling some people from the 1930s when he did it, and everybody just stood by. Now he's waving a flag over his head, claiming he cares about freedom in Libya. He's the last one to care about freedom anywhere.
Trust him as him and the UK as protectors of Libyans. You know, they're protecting civilians, they're protecting rebels. You know, maybe there's some missionaries in Libya that we can protect, too, and rescue, you know, while we're
I'm
there.
I'm sure that there's a great danger of it. That he is looking, and he's pretty much singled out Syria, and Syria may as well understand they're coming after Syria soon with this. But you know, we had to circle one term, the so-called responsibility to protect, or the duty to protect, I forget which it is, RTP they call it. That ought to be thrown in the garbage can, because clearly now we see that the key great powers of the West, I think this is an excuse. They can invoke this so-called humanitarian duty, so as to get rid of countries and leaders they don't like. And the United Nations wasn't set up to enable great powers to attack people. The United Nations actually was established to maintain the peace between states. We now need to get rid of this rotten, dirty, dangerous idea, because coming out of the mouth of Sarkozy, he may as well announce that France intends to rule North Africa, and there's no way. He doesn't get to determine whether Syria has a domestic problem. He doesn't get to determine whether Libya or Algeria has a domestic problem. He has one vote, that's all.
Yeah, well, as you say, France is still acting like an empire. In terms of philosophers, even are backing this. So Bernard-Henri Lévy, the famous French philosopher, bragged that he had helped convince Sarkozy to bomb Libya. And Henri Lévy even said, now we can use this to justify the idea that we can intervene at will, the French concept of humanitarian intervention.
Yeah, it's fun to watch them take the mask off. I do think they're going to be caught here. I mean, there are major states to tell them they're wrong, wrong, wrong. But they have the platform. But in fact, Russia, China, and India, and Brazil, and Turkey have told them, no, no, you don't have all that much power. If we pass a resolution to the UN, you have to adhere to it. You don't get to do as you wish.
And now we've seen why. I mean, the bombing itself, there are 120 cruise missiles or 110 on the first day at, you know, at about 50 million each, by the way. Tell that to the people in Wisconsin, right? But yeah, more than 100 cruise missiles fired. Now they fired another 20 recently. There's been all sorts of bombing strikes, supporting, and plus they even shot up, at the outset of the attack, they shot up Libyan government convoy or armored force, yes. Even after they were retreating. So we even have our own highway of death, Iraq style. And that's where these interventions lead. That's why we have concern from other countries. And I guess there's two lessons that other countries take from this besides the humanitarian intervention. On the one hand, it seems if you're an Arab country, you're only safe from NATO if you are a pro-NATO monarchy. So, you know, if you're the Saudis or Bahrain,
exactly.
You know, if you're a monarch that's pro-NATO, you're safe.
Yeah,
that's
right. If you have NATO is a big dog, you can whistle and they'll come and protect you.
And the other thing is, if you are a country that is not in the good graces of NATO and the United States, I mean, you better have that nuclear weapons program. That's what it seems to be the message, because this
has happened. Absolutely. And definitely don't think that you can play with them, because they are ruthless.
Gaddafi must be...
Fidel Castro has a new statement as of last night. I know through the internet people can find it, but he's comparing the intervention by NATO into Libya with the Mussolini and Hitler's intervention in Spain. It's a very good analogy. I have no problem with it at all, because in eastern Libya you had some people identified as renegade officers who are now trying to overthrow their government. And the great powers are providing air cover, just as Hitler provided air cover for Franco, to enable him to take power in Spain.
History repeats itself, first as tragedy, then as farce. I don't know if we're in the tragedy stage or the farce stage as far as this Libyan intervention.
Farcical history, yes.
Well, you know, on the subject of farce, we have a lot of people jumping into the Obama bandwagon, which is interesting. I know we got to go. I'll keep it short, but it's obvious the U.S. government is struggling. They're beside themselves trying to justify this. They can't explain it to their own people, 70% of whom or so were opposed at the outset, and there's still enormous opposition. People don't understand it. They're comparing it to Iraq, and they understand that there's an oil dimension or that it's about oil to some degree. They're upset with the government for doing this, especially in these budget-conscious times. At the same time that there's this difficulty in justifying it or explaining it to anyone, you have people that want to be associated with it. And one of those, I guess, is Human Rights Watch. On March 18, a day before the attack, the president of Human Rights Watch wrote an article. Again, this is the NGO that talks about what other countries should do to be better and safer. And he says, this is great that the UN and the Security Council is going to put together this no-fly zone in Libya. It's just what people need, and it brings back that discredited doctrine of humanitarian intervention. You know, Bush screwed it up with Iraq, but we can bring it back and feel good about it now. We can bring in humanitarian intervention and protect those Libyans, and they're going to be safe. And by the way, it's so good, we should do it in Sri Lanka. We should do it in Burma. There's countries like Ivory Coast in Africa that need intervention. So his plan is missiles, bombs, cruise missiles. Maybe there's 120 for you know, Cote d'Ivoire, wherever it can be. So that he would jump right onto that. And there are a few people, liberals and people on the left, just waiting to throw their hat in the ring and say, yes, there's NATO intervention. We can get behind. Finally, we haven't had something like this since Clinton, and now we can feel good as Democrat Party supporters or whatever about a war that we're launching. And I guess in Canada, there might be some similar sentiment that we can get behind a Canadian Iraq, a Canadian Libya. It's great. We got six now. So,
it's contributing to it. Yes, indeed. Well, Human Rights Watch, as we pointed out on our website, we quoted them. They participated in meetings at the White House throughout, and I'm sure they're still attending meetings, for crisis discussions. So Human Rights Watch works out of the American White House. I don't know why they have any credibility. As a matter of fact, I don't see how they could have. It doesn't make sense. How can you be a human rights organization and you're meeting in the headquarters of the most powerful state on earth?
Well, again, somehow there's been this assumption that the African Union is not legitimate, elements of the United Nations aren't legitimate, the ALBA countries in Latin America aren't legitimate, but NATO is legitimate, and the UN Security Council is always legitimate, and somehow NATO has become the enforcement arm of the Security Council. Think about that. Because that's what's happening. Yeah, NATO has somehow become the legitimate, in the eyes of the U.S., arm of enforcement for whatever the U.S. decides in the Security Council. And that's the other big joke, too, that the U.S. is getting out of this conflict. conflict? How can the U.S. be getting out of a conflict by handing it to NATO? NATO is the U.S. NATO is run by the U.S.
Yes, well, the U.S. aircraft carrier and submarines, et cetera, are sitting there quite calmly. They're not going home. I mean, it is just optics, and it's silly that it, and but the results are unpleasant for the people of Libya. I agree with Fidel says. Sorry, he says it's a sad fact, but the people of Libya are going to have to fight these guys, and they really don't have, because no one else is actually going to do their duty. Canadians are going to stand by, apparently, hands in pockets, while there's a gentleman's agreement not to talk about this war, and not to talk about the fact that it's illegal.
Even
and
though
that, you know, there might be some consequences, legal and political, for doing this.
Yes, and it's during an election, no less, that we're not discussing that. Maybe we'll
No, it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. And it shows the racism, the arrogance. We don't have to talk about, you know, when we send our warplanes to and get a Lee report, well, we drop some stuff on him. He isn't flying, by the way. He wasn't flying 2 days before they began the bombings. They had stopped flying. So now these cowardly countries come and blast the bejesus out of the Libyans. And
6 million people. 6 million people in
Nobody's
Libya.
Nobody's firing back at them.
Libya's one-fifth the size. Libya's one-fifth the size of Canada in population, or less than a fifth the size of Canada, and it's been ganged up upon.
It took them years to build up that country, and now they're all being blasted away.
Oh, we're making things better, just like...
Very much like what they did with Iraq.
Yes, exactly. When we leave the place, it's a smoldering ruin with no infrastructure, no medical services, no air conditioning. People are dying of basic diseases. We leave it in a much worse state. We bring down the life expectancy. It's mass murder. It's literally the premature death of millions of people, is what these interventions lead to. But we got to go. People should check your website, because you were right on the ball. It was
Fidel-Report. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Phil. Bye-bye.
Okay.